This is November 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Coming your way, the campaigning is over as America votes for its next president.
I want you to understand, our work together will be just beginning.
Now it's up to the American people to deliver justice.
Also ahead, we head to London, where VOA's Luis Ramirez takes a look at Europe's reaction to the U.S. campaign and election. And Steve Barragona will be here with a look at what is purported to be an unhackable voting machine. It's all on today's Election Edition of International Edition. Well, droves of U.S. voters are heading to the polls across this country this Tuesday to elect a new president, the culmination of a long and contentious campaign between Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump. Both of the candidates will be in New York City to hear what is happening as far as the vote tallies are concerned. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti has been watching the campaign. She joins us live from New York City. Carolyn, what has Hillary Clinton's day so far been like?
Hi, Ira. Good to be with you today. I'm actually on the streets of Manhattan, which is the center of New York City. And the highlight for Hillary Clinton today is about a block from where I'm standing at the Javits Convention Center. That's where she's going to gather all her supporters in what they all hope will be a victory party. It's an enormous facility. It's all made of glass. And you know that Hillary Clinton has always said that she wants to break that glass ceiling. And that's a saying here in English that basically means that women cannot rise to the highest positions. But she hopes to break that tonight, and hence that symbolism of the glass ceiling at the Javits Center. You know, 4 hours ago, though, she did cast her vote, along with former President Bill Clinton, about an hour from where I am in Chappaqua, New York. She had a hoarse voice. I know she put in a lot of hours campaigning all around the country, but she said it's a most humbling feeling because of the responsibility that goes with the job of the United States, of being president of the United States of America, and she knows a lot of people are counting on the outcome, and she said, I'll do my best, the best I can, if I'm fortunate enough to win today.
Well,
so that's what Hillary had to say.
That is Carolyn Pursuti joining us from Chappaqua, New York. Let's move to New York City now, where VOA's Mary Alice Salinas is covering and looking at polling places around the city. What kind of information are you gathering so far, Mary Alice?
Well, I got to say, New Yorkers are used to just about everything, and they're in the middle of all the excitement, and everything is going quite smoothly. But one thing is there is that excitement, the passion reflected in New York that you see around the country about what is at stake. Everything is at stake. Many say the trajectory of the country could be at stake. And you see the divisions here when I'm talking to voters, too, on some saying I'm voting for change. That is a driving point behind my, you know, casting that ballot today. Others say we want to continue President Obama's work. So you're seeing Trump supporters and Clinton supporters. Of course, New York City is overwhelmingly Democratic, but you are seeing both. And what's interesting, too, is seeing the masses of people converge on this city. When you have this rare occasion where the two major presidential candidates are being headquartered on election night in the same city. So you see a lot of spectacle, to be honest with you. I'm from the Trump Tower. You had both supporters from both sides. You had more than one shouting match, though it was brief. Then you have street performers and onlookers just checking it out. You have counterterrorism police everywhere. You have street closures everywhere. So it is quite something to be in New York City after a year and a half of one of the most divisive, corrosive, and just really, really bitter campaigns in recent memory.
How crowded are the polling places you've seen so far?
Well, listen, I'm standing by one right now. It is near Times Square. It is going very smoothly. I would, you know, say there, you know, 30 people in line, and sometimes the line shrinks, and people are just, it all seems to be going very smoothly. And one person, after he had just cast his ballot, say, you know, it is really nice to see all of New Yorkers come together, which doesn't happen because they're such a diverse group, all that often, and feel the same excitement and feel the significance of casting their ballot today. And so I would say that part is going very smoothly. There was talk of all kinds of voter intimidation, certainly not here in New York, but in different parts of the country. Here, you know, it's just humming along.
Mary Alice, with both candidates planning to be in New York City tonight, what about security?
Well, listen, New York police, an official say this is, they will have a historic election day police presence, more than 5,000. And it is interesting that it's not just, you know, closing streets. It's not just security, regular security detail. It is the counterterrorism force. And you see them at several sites, including outside of Trump Tower. We were there when, you have some of these sort of fight broke out around the headquarters for both presidential candidates. We saw them pull up yesterday. We saw them barricade around there. So, you know, there is some chatter, intelligence officials say, about potential targets, including in New York. And they weren't sure how credible it is, but certainly you can tell they're taking this very seriously. Even though everything's going along, New Yorkers are going about their day, as usual, too. But you could tell this is something that they're very closely monitoring and manning.
VOA's Mary Alice Salinas near polling places and checking out New York City for us.
Thank you, Aaron.
Outside Trump Tower, supporters for both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump clashed.
Hillary's going to go to jail.
The police presence grew, along with the crowd and the spectacle.
So vote for Donald Trump, my friends. Make America great again. That sounds like a good idea to me.
Both sides made their case.
I believe he's made this country a more divisive country, where Hillary will bring us all together.
I just feel that he's a real person, a real business person, and I feel that he knows how to speak to people and get the job done.
Trump raced through key states rallying for votes.
We need a lot of energy in our country, a lot of bum bum. Need a lot of things. We don't need Hillary.
Back in Midtown Manhattan, counterterrorism teams arrived at the Hilton. Trump's campaign will be headquartered here on election night. The Jones family did not know that when they booked a room here months ago.
It's been a contentious battle. Been very uncomfortable, so I'm looking forward to Wednesday and getting through this whole election.
I really don't think we'll stick around the hotel Tuesday.
More than 5,000 New York police are standing watch on Election Day, a historic number following one of the most caustic election cycles in recent memory. Mary Alice Salinas, VOA News, New York.
Well, Andrew Palshewski joins us in studio now. As you know, he watches social media for us, and this must be quite a busy day as far as social media is concerned.
It seems that just about everybody in the United States is talking about this election, including the two candidates that are running for the Democratic and Republican tickets. You have Hillary Clinton tweeting out, she says, "Everything we've worked towards comes down to today. Retweet this if you're voting for Hillary." Donald Trump's message a little simpler. He tweets out, all in caps, "Today we make America great again." So they're weighing in, and we see a lot of people weighing in with hashtag election day, hashtag voted, videos and photos from some of the very long lines that people are standing on to vote, pictures of ballots that people are voting and very excited to share that, which, by the way, might be illegal in some jurisdictions. So people have to be very careful if they post those photos of the ballots on social media. And a lot of people sharing the I voted stickers. Here in the U.S., when you vote, you get a sticker that says I voted. Every jurisdiction is different. I'm wearing mine right here that I got in Washington, D.C. this morning.
That's so you can get a free coffee somewhere, right?
That's the other thing. On social media, a lot of people sharing a lot of the businesses that are rewarding people for going out and exercising their right to vote. And one thing I saw that we actually saw back in the New York primary earlier this year is at the gravesite of Susan B. Anthony in upstate New York. She, of course, had a crucial role in fighting for the women's right to vote here in the U.S. People today are putting those I voted stickers on her tombstone, and women are going there placing flowers there, taking pictures there. to show that her dream has been realized. And not only are women voting, but they're voting potentially for the first female president of the United States. So something really moving that a lot of people are sharing on social media.
That's Andrew Palaszczuk. Michael Bowman is VOA's Senate correspondent, but he has been following this campaign and this election for a long, long time. And what's your overall view of the country's tenor about what you have heard as far as what the ideas are on the Hill? What's the overall feeling of this election?
Well, this is an election like as happens every 4 years, where you're not simply picking a president, but all seats in the House of Representatives are up for grabs, as well as one third of the Senate. And in the Senate, of course, what is at stake is possibly the composition of the Supreme Court going forward for years, for decades, for possibly a generation. President Barack Obama nominated a Supreme Court justice someone to fill the seat of Antonin Scalia, who died earlier this year. But Merrick Garland has not gotten a hearing. And there are rumblings within the Republican caucus that if, in fact, they retain their majority, or even if they don't, that there could be a scorched earth campaign to essentially deny filling that seat throughout the Clinton presidency. So there is definitely a lot at stake here.
Which has really come out, especially on the campaigning by President Obama over the past few days, as far as how important what's called what, the down election is concerned. Is that what they call it?
the down ballot race.
The down ballot, yeah, which means trying to elect Democratic candidates to the House and the Senate. And how is that judged so far? You can't predict, obviously, but again, what's the momentum here?
Well, I would be very careful to make any predictions. I mean, if you look at the sort of presidential race, I will remind you that in 2004 on Election Day, the Kerry campaign was absolutely convinced they had it in the bag. Ditto Mitt Romney in 2012. And of course, we all very much remember the Kerry presidency and the Romney presidency. So it's always a danger when you try to predict what's happening on Election Day based on random tweets that come out, random information that comes out. However, broadly speaking, Democrats are expected to boost their numbers in both the House and the Senate. In the House, possibly by as many as 12. They would need 30 to capture the majority, so 12 is well short of that. In the Senate, they might pick up 4, 5, or 6. If they pick up 4 seats and Hillary Clinton is elected president, they will have the majority. They would need to they would need a net gain of 5 seats if Donald Trump wins tonight.
Well, we shall see what happens. It obviously is very important to Democrats and to Republicans, this down ballot. As far as just a stoppage of anything happening, which has been a huge problem expressed by many Americans, of nothing happening in the House and the Senate.
Well, gridlock is something that I have had a front row seat witnessing in the Senate over the last 7 years that I've been there. No one expects it to disappear, regardless of the composition of Congress and regardless of who wins the White House. I suspect, however, that Hillary Clinton, if she is victorious tonight, is going to make an argument to Republicans that there are certain things that need to get done, that there are certain things that we can work on together, whether it's infrastructure and perhaps getting a better handle on America's finances. You would expect any president-elect, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, to extend an olive leaf to Congress, a olive branch to Congress. Whether or not Congress responds favorably to it could be depending on who controls both chambers. And for that, we're just going to have to wait until tonight.
And either Michael or Andrew, we've already heard Donald Trump refuse to say whether he is going to support the eventual winner. Anybody saying anything about that on social media?
No, it's kind of the big question mark on social media. What's going to happen tonight? What time things are going to happen tonight? If it could be an early night once they call the races in the West Coast of the United States. California has 55 electoral votes, and Hillary Clinton is widely expected to win California. So if they call that race, that might put her over the top. And then it's just a waiting game to see if Donald Trump concedes. If he doesn't concede, whether Hillary Clinton goes ahead and just makes her speech, which would be kind of unprecedented for the president-elect to speak before her opponent concedes. So a lot of questions about that. We'll see what happens tonight. But one thing I do want to say really quickly, just to touch on what Michael said, in the midst of all the campaign signs in my neighborhood, I have seen one. It's been up for the past couple weeks. It says, "Senators, hashtag do your job." And it's talking about the Supreme Court vacancy, urging senators to vote on that vacancy. So I think we're going to see, as much as we've seen social media as a powerful tool in this election, we're going to see these advocacy campaigns start after the new president is elected, after the inauguration. And social media is going to be a huge tool for that, for these Supreme Court vacancies and for other things that they're going to really push Congress on.
Andrew Palcheski, Michael Bowman, I thank you both. And we all of us, not just here, but all over the world, basically, are waiting for the results of this election. I'm Ira Melman. This is International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, droves of U.S. voters are heading to polls across the country to elect a new president. Iraqi investigators probe a mass grave that was discovered the previous day by troops advancing further into Islamic State-held territory near the city of Mosul. South Korea's embattled president says she'll allow the country's parliament to select a new prime minister. That's a major political concession as she seeks to survive a growing political scandal. And Hungary's parliament narrowly blocks an attempt by its prime minister to amend its constitution to bar the resettlement of refugees in Hungary without the approval of the Hungarian lawmakers and authorities. This is VOA.
Tuesday, November 8th, the American people choose a new president. VOA's live election night coverage begins at 2200 hours Universal Time. As events unfold, we'll bring you the finale of this historic campaign from Washington and VOA correspondents across the United States and around the world. Tuesday night and Wednesday morning, you'll hear comprehensive coverage until the last speech is done. It's America Votes 2016 on VOA.
This is VOA. This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. What is the picture of the U.S. election as far as Europeans are concerned? Let's get in touch with VOA's London correspondent, Luis Ramirez. Luis, what's the overall feeling? What's the overall take of the U.S. election there?
Well, it's one of very great anticipation and suspense. People seem to be as interested here as they are back in the United States. Just to give you a sense of what the level of interest is, pretty much all major newspapers across the continent, in Britain and in the continent of Europe, are leading on Tuesday with their headlining the U.S. election. In London, for example, the Daily Telegraph has a big American flag on it, and the face of Donald Trump with his remark saying it's going to be Brexit plus, 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 making reference to that historic vote back in June in which British voters decided to break with the status quo and leave the European Union. That kind of anticipation suggests that people are looking for the possibility of a very big break from the status quo in the United States. That said, if you ask most European leaders and many people on the street here, they favor Hillary Clinton to be the winner, if anything, because, as one pundit put it, she's a known quantity.
Thanks, Luis. Luis Ramirez reporting and talking with us from London. Many American voters are casting their ballots today using machines that experts say are too easy to tamper with. Well, with Russian cyber attacks accused of trying to influence the election, many Americans have been calling for an overhaul of these electronic voting machines. In response, some U.S. researchers have been trying to build one or some that are much tougher to hack. VOA Steve Barragona met with them.
The next time voters cast ballots for president, they might use something like this.
This is a research prototype. A real one would not be built out of cheap painted plywood.
Dan Wallach is a computer science professor at Rice University. He's building a new kind of voting machine from the ground up because he says many of the systems in use today are alarmingly vulnerable to hacking.
When you have paperless electronic voting machines that have no plan B if they've been tampered with, that raises serious concerns.
But many local governments don't have the money to replace them. So Wallach and his colleagues are building their system with low-cost, easy-to-find components.
There's a cheap inkjet printer and a tablet. Both of these are off-the-shelf parts.
Voters make their choices on the touchscreen tablet. The votes are protected with sophisticated cryptography.
The crypto can do some really great tricks. But if you don't trust the cryptography, that's okay, because we also have printed paper ballots that go into a box.
Voters can see the candidate the computer says they chose. The ballot then goes in the box. Only then is the vote cast. And if there's any question about the electronic votes, the paper ballots are the backup. But security was not the only factor they considered, says Wallach's colleague, Claudia Ziegler-Assemian.
It really doesn't matter how secure a voting system is, that if voters can't vote with it and easily cast their ballot, then yeah, the security is a moot point.
The result is called StarVote for secure, transparent, auditable, and reliable. Wallach says it will deliver much more security for half or less of what current machines do. StarVote will not be ready for this election. The team hopes to have it in polling stations by 2018. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Houston.
Well, you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, John Dryden. And just a reminder, at 2200 UTC, tune in to your radio, listen at voanews.com and all of the social platforms I just mentioned, plus others for our election coverage. I'm Ira Melman. Have a good day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The latest report by an independent investigative panel of experts confirms that the Assad regime is responsible for a third chemical weapons attack on the Syrian people. In its October 2016 report, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, United Nations Joint Investigative Mechanism, or JIM, concluded the Syrian Arab Armed Forces used weaponized chlorine in the town of Khmenes in 2015. This latest finding followed an August 2016 report, where the JIM concluded that Syrian Arab Armed Forces used helicopters to drop barrel bombs filled with chlorine gas on the civilian population of Sarmin in 2015 and had attacked the town of Talmenes in a similar way in 2014. That report additionally found that Daesh used mustard gas in an attack in 2015 in Mareya. The leadership panel of the JIM reaffirmed its belief that it is absolutely critical to hold those who use or intend to use chemicals as weapons accountable for their acts. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner noted that the JIM's investigation corroborated what we have known for years. The Assad regime has systematically and repeatedly used chemical weapons against its own people. In a statement, U.S. National Security Council spokesperson Ned Price condemned in the strongest possible terms the Assad regime's defiance of the long-standing global norm against chemical weapons use. The United States, he said, continues to work with our international partners to enforce accountability through appropriate diplomatic mechanisms, including through the United Nations Security Council and the OPCW. On October 31st, the UN Security Council unanimously extended, through Resolution 2314, the mandate of the Joint Investigative Mechanism until November 18, 2016, in order to allow additional time for the Security Council to reach agreement on a year-long renewal of the JIM. This renewal would allow the JIM to continue to probe into the documented use of chemical weapons in Syria. U.S. Deputy Permanent Representative to the UN, Ambassador Michelle Sisson, welcomed the Security Council's adoption of Resolution 2314, noting that the Security Council must condemn and hold responsible whoever is involved in these chemical weapons attacks, and the JIM is a key tool to help us do that. National Security Council spokesperson Price said, "We must send a strong signal that the use of weapons of mass destruction will not be tolerated by the international community."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.